This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Funding for research into cancers that affect children falls well below that for adult cancer, but headway is being made on that front right here in Charlotte. In recent years, Charlotte's Levine Children's Hospital has embarked on notable research in pediatric cancers and clinical trials. In fact, they are currently offering over 60 clinical trials through the Children's Oncology Group, a collaborative consortium which includes patients, researchers, and hospitals throughout the world. That means children in Charlotte have extraordinary access to cutting-edge research that could save their lives. And here to talk about what this means for children, for medicine, for Charlotte, and for the hospital is Dr. Daniel McMahon, Director of the Division of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology at Levine Children's Hospital. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And also with us in our Spirit Square studio is Diane Restano, the parent of a child who lost his battle with bone cancer in 2010. She is a past member of the board of the Family Advisory Council of Levine Children's Hospital, a current member of the Board of Ambassadors at the hospital, and president and founder of the Joe Dance Film Festival, an event established in honor of her son, which raises money for cancer research for rare pediatric cancers. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
And by the way, we have information about the Joe Dance Film Festival, which is coming up August 2nd and 3rd. That's this weekend.
It is this weekend, yeah.
On our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well.
Okay.
You've been in pediatric medicine for, I don't know, a long time, doctor, since your residency days, and you spent 17 years, I think, at Carolina's healthcare system. When did Levine Children's Hospital open, and when did their participation in cancer research begin?
The participation in cancer research started long before I got here. In the Carolina's Medical Center, we were part of a large cooperative group called the Children's Oncology Group. Levine Children's Hospital, I think, opened 6-7 years ago, and about 5 years ago, we started a developmental therapeutics program, which is what you're discussing and what we're talking about, which is trying to evaluate new drugs to treat children with cancer.
And as you're the director of the Division of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology, so what exactly is your role in that capacity?
Well, we actually have the over division is pediatric hematology, oncology, and bone marrow transplant, and we actually have a new director, Dr. Peter Anderson, who is kind of a world expert in bone tumors. So I oversee the day-to-day clinical running of the pediatric clinic and the pediatric ward where we have our cancer patients.
How many patients do you have on average, as week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year?
We have 120 newly diagnosed cancer patients in the past year here in Charlotte that we take care of at Levine Children's Hospital. So that translates into about 10,000 clinic visits a year.
Is that a lot, 120?
120 is a lot. When I first got here, we saw 11 my first year here. So we've expanded tremendously.
Well, I was going to get to that because I know that in the last 5 years, your patient load has just ballooned, for lack of a better term. Is that because of the reputation that you're building and the expertise that you've gathered at the hospital, or is it because there are more cases?
I don't think it's because of more cases. I think it's because one of the primary things is the opening of Levine Children's Hospital. And so I think that more patients are staying in the community to be treated, whereas before they would go elsewhere. And as the population of Charlotte increases, there will be an increase in the number of patients. But I do think it's because we have improved the quality of the care that we give, and Levine's is a wonderful facility.
One of your colleagues at the hospital says that clinical research is an essential element of the hospital's mission. How unusual is that for a hospital of, because this is a pretty big hospital, so I don't want to say of this size, but in a city of this size, how unusual is that?
I think that's the rule. I think in pediatric cancer and in children's hospital and specifically, clinical trials really run our program. That's how we've made such enormous strides in treating pediatric cancer. When I was in medical school, children with leukemia had a 40% chance of being cured, and now that is 90%, and that has all been through clinical trials. So what we're doing in our clinical trials is is what most children's hospitals do. What we do differently is we have a developmental therapeutics program, which there's very few hospitals in the country, probably 20 or 25, which are using these new agents to try and bring them into the forefront and in frontline therapy.
Explain that, developmental therapeutic program. What exactly is
it? What happens when a new drug is discovered or made that seems to have some clinical activity against cancer in laboratory animals? They're usually tested in adults, and they go through clinical trials to make sure they're safe. Then they get translated into pediatrics, and the first thing is we have to determine, is it safe, what the dose of the medication should be. And there's very few centers that have the capability of doing that. It is there's a lot of administrative work and a lot of data that needs to be collected, and it's very expensive, and that's what we're doing.
U.S. News & World Report placed Levine's cancer program among the top 50 pediatric cancer programs in 2012 and 2013. I didn't know this till yesterday. This is pretty. That's a big feather in your cap, I would think.
It is. We're all very proud of that. And to have that 2 years in a row, knowing where we've come from, that's something that we're all very proud of. And our goal is to continue to improve on that.
And you, of course, are part of the Pediatric Hematology Oncology Division, and you also do bone marrow transplants as part of your cancer crusade, so to speak. But what other cancers does the hospital treat, pediatrically speaking?
We basically treat all of the childhood malignancies. We treat leukemia, lymphoma, bone tumors, soft tissue tumors. We have a doctor who specifically treats brain tumors, which is one of the more common malignancies that children get. We treat blood disorders and clotting problems, and then we have our bone marrow transplant doctor. So there's not a pediatric malignancy that can be diagnosed that we don't have the capability of taking care of.
You're on this list, this U.S. News & World Report list, and you have been gaining this reputation. And I know that you're, and we'll talk a little bit about this as we go through here, you've begun to attract patients from well beyond Charlotte. How have you been able to build this program in what seems to me to be a relatively short amount of time?
I think we've had an awful lot of support from the hospital administration, and then the community has been a huge support. We've received a lot of grants from various philanthropy groups, and then private, some of the patients and parents of the children that we've taken care of. Joe Dance is one example of that, and through the community support, we've been able to raise a significant amount of money that has gone a long way towards supporting our program.
Because people, as I said, do come from far away. How far away do they come?
Well, we have several patients from Puerto Rico, Florida, many from North Carolina, other institutions.
Why? Surely there must be hospitals that work like this in Atlanta or in Miami or Orlando, perhaps. I don't know. Why Charlotte?
Well, I think there really aren't that many hospitals. Between Atlanta and Washington, D.C., there's no hospital that really does the phase one studies or the development or therapeutics that we do. And we do offer some treatment regimens that may not be available in Atlanta because not every institution will open every available phase one study because they're very laborious and they're involved. It costs a lot of money to open a trial. So we do get patients from six or seven different states and Puerto Rico.
Cancer strikes me as being pernicious, but particularly so in children. What attracted you to this branch of cancer research and cancer medicine, children's cancers? Because that must be heartbreaking.
Well, first of all, most of the children do very well. Over 70 to 80% of them survive. So it's very rewarding from that perspective. When I was in medical school and in residency, that was the time where we started to see marked improvements in survival. And so that really attracted me. The clinical trials were really becoming more scientific, better run, and becoming nationwide. So a lot of different things attracted me. It's very rewarding.
Let me share with our listeners some facts about pediatric cancer that you guys supplied us. Nearly 13,500 children are diagnosed every year, the majority of which are between 10 and 13. Why does that seem to be?
That's for those are facts for osteosarcoma, actually.
Okay, but why does that seem to be the age 10 to 13?
For the bone tumors, you tend to see the development of bone tumors during a growth spurt. So that's why we see that peak in that age group. If you look at childhood leukemia, there's a peak between age 3 and 5, and so throughout the entire spectrum of ages, there's quite a bit of there's different sort of malignancies that will occur.
And I'm told that only 4% of funding from the National Cancer Institute, and there are other funding organizations, but only 4% from that goes toward pediatric cancer, and that pediatric cancer is funded at a much lower level than adult cancers. Why?
Well, I think because of the number of patients that are diagnosed is so low compared to what we see in adult cancer. There's, you know, more than 150,000 women diagnosed with breast cancer, and there's certainly that number with colon cancer and lung cancer and men with prostate cancer. So although we seem to be fairly busy taking care of children with cancer, the number of children in the United States who are diagnosed with cancer is relatively low compared to adults. And therefore, a lot of the funding goes to the adults. I think that at a national level, pediatric oncology is fairly the funding is fairly low.
These numbers may be for
They're for osteosarcoma.
Because I wanted to ask about this, and this is kind of a sad fact to me, that the children who suffer, it said simply from cancer, but maybe it's osteosarcoma, correct me if I'm wrong, and through cancer treatment have a lower survival rate after 5 years, 50%, lower than adults, that's 74%. Is that
for? And I think that there's been some discussion about, I know that Joe was in a clinical trial and they were going to follow him.
Joe is your son.
Joe is our son that passed away from osteosarcoma, and they were going to follow him throughout his the rest of his life, because some of the chemotherapies that he had caused secondary cancers, not recurrences, totally different cancers is right. One of the things that is a concern for a pediatric cancer.
Well, he had a spot on his lung after he'd gone through treatment for osteosarcoma. They found several years later a spot on his lung. Is that what eventually took him?
Actually, it was a year after he was out of his first protocol, and that's where osteosarcoma recurs, is in the lung.
Okay.
And it's actually a hard tissue in the lung. So you have to go in and do lung surgery. They do what's called a double thoracotomy. And they actually go into his lung and feel for those tumors and remove them. So it's not, yes, it's a spot on his lung, but that is where bone cancer recurs.
I see. So, but most people who suffer from different kinds of cancer do not have those recurrent cancers, or do not have different kinds of cancer cropping up, or do they?
Most children who are treated for childhood malignancies survive. And most do not develop secondary malignancies or another type of cancer. There certainly are those that do, but it's a very small percentage of patients.
We're going to talk about some of these clinical trials and how they work and who is eligible, and we'll talk about Joe as well and his situation and what led you to this table today, Diane Restano. Also with us, Dr. Daniel McMahon, Director of Pediatric Hematology and the Oncology Division at Levine Children's Hospital. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting I Love Lucy live on stage. It's in color, you know. The antics of America's favorite foursome, Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel, August 7th through the 18th in Knight Theater. Tickets at 704-372-1000. Well, beauty pageants have long been a staple of American culture. They address our competitive streak, I suppose, but supporters also point to the benefits derived by contestants and winners, from gaining poise and polish to getting an education. But like everything else in America, pageants have expanded from just one or two major competitions to thousands of them, and now they involve little girls. We're going to go a little more than skin deep to explore this world Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, more revelations over NSA surveillance programs, July unemployment numbers, and what Congress managed to accomplish before its summer recess.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. Daniel McMahon from Levine Children's Hospital and Diane Restano, who is the mother of Joe Restano, who is a young man who lost his life to osteosarcoma a few years ago. We'll talk about that in a second. She's also the president and founder of the Joe Dance Film Festival, which is coming up this weekend to raise money for cancer research. Your son was 20 when he
passed away, yes.
In 2010. He had a four-year battle with this. Mm-hmm. And let me first of all say how sorry I am for your loss. He was a remarkable young man. I read a lot about him yesterday and watched two videos that he videos of speeches that he gave to his high school
His chapel talks at Macaulay.
Just remarkable.
Thank you.
Is that what brought you to Levine and to the board of the hospital when you were on the board of the Levine, the fact that your child went through this?
The Family Advisory Council actually, at that point, somebody recommended my name to be on that council. You can be a part of that board several different ways. You can be recommended. You can inquire about it. There's a questionnaire. It goes to a panel, and they invited me to sit on that advisory council, and I did for 3 years.
Your first exposure to all of this because of your son?
For the council, yeah.
So your experience must be not unlike that of any parent or any family who has a child that is suddenly diagnosed with this strange and terrifying situation, this cancer, whether it's osteosarcoma or something else. Describe, if you can, how you navigate and how you help your child navigate through what they are going to face as they fight this disease.
I think that you rely a lot on your family. You rely a lot on your doctor. Joe's diagnosis was kind of went down a windy road. He fell on a campus run, hurt his arm and hurt his leg. His arm and wrist was healing, but his leg was not. It really was misdiagnosed twice, and it was finally the third time they said, let's do an X-ray and see what's going on. We were really, really fortunate because we had just moved to Charlotte. We'd been here maybe less than a year. And through a friend, we knew a doctor at CMC. I was actually in Chattanooga when Joe was diagnosed. I called her and I said, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And this really happened and made me feel very comfortable about being part of Levine Children's Hospital in this oncology group. She said, I think I know who you need to see. And she said, I will call you back in 5 minutes. And she did. She called me back in 5 minutes. It was Dr. Mary Hall. And she said, Dr. Niesel will be calling you shortly. And I think you have an appointment Monday morning. And I thought, okay. And you know what? It was less than 5 minutes later, Dr. Niesel called me, and I could tell he was walking the halls of the hospital because you could hear that. He called me, and he said, I'll see you Monday morning at 9 a.m. And then from that point on, it went very fast. It goes very fast on the pediatric level. I mean, we saw him Monday. Biopsy was done that day. We were in Dr. McMahon's office shortly after that. Chemo port was put in on Wednesday, and I think we started chemotherapy on Thursday.
Now, your son, when I saw him make these speeches in those videos, was around 19 or 20 when he made these, but he was diagnosed when he was about 16 years old.
Yeah, it just turned 16, 17, yeah.
And he talked about in those videos the way he handled it and how he kept it fairly close to the vest. He apparently handled this very stoically. But inside, he must have been frightened. I would be scared to death, obviously. How did he handle it behind the scenes?
You know, Joe was actually a very private person. Mm-hmm. And this put him on a stage that he really didn't want to be on. Yeah. And one of the things that he always worried about was that he was treated differently because he had cancer. He kept it very private. And we, you know, one of the things that you have to do is that at this age, I mean, he was 16, turning 17, going into 18, 19, 20, into adulthood. They're at that age that you have to respect what they want to do and how they want to handle this cancer. Mm-hmm. He kept certain people in the loop, but there were a lot of people that were at arm's length. I think that, you know, when you watch his chapel talks, the first one especially, is he, that was a big step for him to say, you know, I've got cancer and I can't do it alone. The first round, the first time through, I think he felt like he could do that, don't you?
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And then I think when it recurred, and it recurred so quickly, you know, that's a road when you're within a year of recurrence. You know you're in a slippery slope. And that was a point where he said, you know, you can't just do everything yourself. You yeah. really need help.
This is, as I understand it, a rare cancer. Only about 3% of children come down with osteosarcoma. He was diagnosed in 2006, spent 4 years on and off in treatment.
Yes.
Died in 2010. Since then, and it's only been 3 years, but since then, have there been improvements in treatment modalities? And are things, at least in the future, looking brighter for people who are diagnosed with this?
Well, with osteosarcoma, I think that over the past several decades, we've made a lot of advances in our delivery of chemotherapy and the surgical techniques. When I first started, most children had amputations. Now we do surgical procedures that spare the limb. We haven't made a lot of progress in new drugs in this disorder. It's not a disease that responds terrifically to chemotherapy. We are basically using the same drugs now that we used in 1984. We're using them a little bit differently, and we probably get a little bit more effectiveness out of it. But we haven't made those great strides, and there has not been a new drug that has come along that has surpassed what we can do with the three drugs that we use up front.
So this is not an example of a disease that would be treated through a clinical trial at the moment.
There's multiple clinical trials.
There
open.
Are.
Yeah, the clinical trials have been available, and they just haven't shown an improvement in the new drug that we have used.
So when there are very few new drugs or no new drugs in this case, what are the trials about? Just dosages? What are they about?
There are new drugs. I think Joe was part of a clinical trial, and one of them was to children who what we normally do is that children get two or three months of chemotherapy up front. And then they have their tumor resected, and the tumor is looked at under the microscope to see how effective the chemotherapy was. And for those children who had a great response, the chemotherapy works well, and they have a very high survival rate. We just haven't figured out, in those children that don't have a great response, what would work to improve that response so that they don't recur.
And Joe had a poor response.
Right.
He had a very poor response.
In terms of being able to tolerate the drug,
chemotherapy, his tumor did not respond.
What the pathologists do when the tumor is removed is they look at it under the microscope to see how much of it has died, and if you don't have a certain percentage of the tumor that has died, it's not a very good response, and Joe fit into that category.
Yeah.
We've been talking around the clinical trials, and people may understand how these work. Some may not, but as the name implies, these are trials. You are testing. These are experiments, and usually in experiments, at least in science class when I was there, there was a control group, and there were people where they were not the control group. So in this case, you would have people, children on placebo versus children on other?
No, with this, to use an example of the trial that Joe was on, the standard of care is to use three drugs in children who have a good response continue on with those drugs, and children who have a poor response, the trial looked at continuing the same three drugs because that would be what standard of care is, versus adding two more drugs to that regimen, which we know have effectiveness in children who have relapsed. And the results of that trial, we don't know yet. Does it help to add these two different agents to the three drugs that we started with? Does that improve the survival in people who respond poorly?
Who make for good candidates to be part of these clinical trials?
Generally, any child diagnosed with cancer is eligible and for a clinical trial. And Joe was part of a phase three trial, which is comparing two kind of standard regimens or drugs that are approved. And we know that children who are placed on clinical trials, phase three trials, do better than children who are not placed on clinical trials.
Are there people who opt not to be part of this?
Yes, there are families who opt not to be part of clinical trials for various reasons. One is there's a randomization so that a computer will pick which regimen you get, and some families don't want that. Some don't want the added toxicity of giving extra drugs. And there's a lot of reasons.
So there is a risk involved in this.
There's a risk that you could get two drugs that added significant side effects and in the end didn't really help your treatment. And that happens. The majority of clinical trials are safe. They give results that are actually usually superior to what we historically use. So they've been invaluable for advancing the prognosis of children with cancer.
And Joe participated in one of these trials.
Yes, he did. He wanted to. When he was diagnosed, they presented that option to us and to our family. There wasn't a decision that Joe made without discussing everything with every member of the family. That was his way of making decisions. And, he felt that it was a good thing to do because his trial was going to follow him for the rest of his life and see what would happen to him as he lived longer.
Yeah.
And he felt that that would be important information. And you should know that's the way Joe thought, because Joe wanted to be a doctor. This was what he wanted to do, and he knew the significance of this. And one of the things, and you asked me this earlier, and one of the things that was interesting with dealing with Joe is that, and his cancer, is that he was extremely well, for lack of a better word, he was extremely educated about his cancer. He knew what was going on. I mean, he knew when his recurrence came back. He knew when his response was poor. He knew what that meant. And some that might be a lot of the reasons why he didn't talk to a lot of people about it.
It's a pretty heavy burden for somebody that age to carry around.
It is. But Joe was, that type of person. He just, he took on a lot for himself and for others and for his family and for his friends.
So I'm hearing you say that Joe made the decision. It was his decision to make, and you allowed him to make the decision to be part of these clinical trials.
He made the decision with his family.
Okay.
And
what would you say to families who face this opportunity? And that's what it is, I suppose. It's a risk, but it's an opportunity. If they have a child with cancer, what would you say to them? How do you make this decision?
Well, I think it actually depends on the cancer. In our case, my experience has been with osteosarcoma with my son. And one of the things that actually started us all down this road for raising money, which we've been connected with Levine Children's Hospital since Joe started a bone cancer walk at Macaulay.
That's the school he attended.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that started us on this road was exactly what Dr. McMahon said, that there's really never, there hasn't been a new drug for this cancer for a very, very long time. And, you know, when you realize how small the population that is being diagnosed, the survival rate that is not nearly like other childhood cancers, like leukemia, which is really improved, you know, you just... I would say to them, if you can be part of a clinical trial that can gather information for other children coming through this, it's beneficial. It's beneficial for the whole pediatric community for rare cancers. I can't tell them you have to do it, but it's really an opportunity.
1984, I think, was the year you said that was the last time a new drug came along for this kind of cancer. And as Diane just pointed out, if only 3% of children who get cancer, get osteosarcoma, then there's not a lot of profit in that for drug companies. Not a lot of incentive, I guess, monetarily speaking, for them to develop drugs. Is that all it's about at these pharmaceutical companies? Is it just about that, or is there some humanity connection to what they do?
Or no, I think
or some responsibility to what they do?
I think that drug companies are very anxious to try and move forward with new drugs. I think that there's, you know, 400 children diagnosed with osteosarcoma in the country, so there aren't a lot of patients. But the two latest drugs that we've been using for a while, the VP16 and nifosfamide, which was part of this clinical trial, they have uses in many, many other different types of cancer, and particularly in adults. So most chemotherapy is not specific for one cancer, so that if they find activity in osteosarcoma, they may find it in another.
But this is not the only disease that I've heard people talk about. There have been, in terms of the long time between new drugs coming out, there have been a lot of drugs that, what am I trying to say? There have been a lot of diseases that for which there have not been any new drugs in a very long time, not just this. Is this something that's, what's going on in the pharmaceutical industry that's causing this?
I don't think it's for lack of trying. I think that when you look at acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is the most common malignancy, we're basically, again, using the same drugs that we used 20 and 30 years ago. We just are using them better in different dosing. And new drugs have come along that in certain subsets of those patients have done wonderful things.
New drugs have also come along that were not as good as the old drugs.
There's not an improvement on the old drugs, and so we, when you have a disease entity where you're using drugs that we have used for a while and are safe, and 90% of the children survive, it's hard to come up with a new drug that's going to hit a home run. Again, in certain subsets of children that we know have a very poor prognosis, those things have happened.
Dr. Daniel McMahon is the director of the Pediatric Hematology and Oncology Division at Levine Children's Hospital, and Diane Restano is the president and founder of the Jodans Film Festival, which we'll find out more about in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Horak Talley, including wealth management and tax planning attorneys for individuals and businesses, advising clients on asset preservation, estate planning, and wealth-building strategies. Horak Talley, attorneys who get things done. Well, it's Friday. That means it's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, the National Hour first, and Diane and her panel of journalists will talk about the week's top national news stories, including more revelations over the NSA surveillance programs, July unemployment numbers, and what Congress managed to accomplish before its summer recess. Not much is the answer to that. That's coming up in 20 minutes to 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. We are going to be mentioning and talking about, as we go through this program, among other things, the Jodans Film Festival. And you can find out more details on that festival on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And we will continue our conversation about pediatric cancer when we come back. Stay with us.
Danny Niblett of Audi of Charlotte, a WFAE underwriter.
I have listened to NPR for years, so I'm very familiar with the format. And I noticed that we had not been with WFAE for some time. And I looked at the months that we were, and I saw that our business was better the months that we were. So I made a decision to bring WFAE back on board.
For more information, email underwriting@WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about pediatric cancer and clinical research and the strides being made at Levine Children's Hospital and obviously the need for funding for all of this, which we'll get to in a moment, with Dr. Daniel McMahon, who is the Director of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology Division at Levine, and Diane Restano, the mother of a young man, Joe Restano, who succumbed to osteosarcoma at the age of 20, just 3 years ago, and she was on the Parents Advisory Council of the Levine and is an ambassador for the hospital and is now president and founder of the Joe Dance Film Festival. Let's talk about these clinical trials for a second. Three things have come up: phase one, phase two, phase three. What are the differences?
Well, a phase one trial is when a new drug is discovered and it's thought that it might have activity in cancer. So what happens is it goes through a phase one study where it's trying to find out what's the appropriate dose, what are all the side effects that can occur. When it passes that, it goes into a phase two study, which generally is used in patients who have had recurrent disease, and it's usually the drug is used in several different tumor types to see what type of activity it has in the children who have recurred. And then in those that really do show activity, it is in a phase three trial, which is looking at standard of care versus usually adding that regimen or that new drug to that regimen. And phase three studies have been around in Charlotte for a long time, and to a certain extent phase two studies. But phase one studies have never been available until 4 or 5 years ago.
And you're currently offering, I think, over 60 clinical trials.
We have about 60 phase three clinical trials, and we have 20 or 30 phase one and phase two studies.
Is that a lot for a hospital this size and a city this size?
It really is. It's an awful lot of clinical trials, and it kind of speaks to the support that we get from both the administration and the community.
And you're a member of several consortia of hospitals around the world, actually, that
right.
are conducting these clinical trials. How do these consortia work, and what does it mean for Charlotte to be part of these consortia?
Well, the largest one is the Children's Oncology Group, which basically every institution in the country which takes care of children with cancer is part of, and that's where most of the phase three studies originate and come from. We're also part of a leukemia study group, a neuroblastoma study group, and a brain tumor study group, and those are where the phase one and two trials come out of. And basically what happens is a group of investigators get together and design a clinical trial using promising drugs, and they're opened at each individual hospital.
And what does this mean for patients, for children, for parents in Charlotte to have these clinical trials underway and available?
I think that the phase three clinical trials means that the child gets state of the art, or what may be state of the art, what may be the standard of care in 3 or 4 years. For phase one studies, it means that children who have recurrent disease can continue to receive therapy that is potentially beneficial to them and to others. In the past, people had to go to Washington, D.C. or several hundred miles away, and families just didn't want to undertake that at the time when their child is losing their battle with cancer. To leave their family and go to another city is difficult. Now they can stay locally, and that's really the benefit to the community.
Have there been what you would consider either success stories or breakthroughs of some sort that as a result of these trials in Charlotte or as a result of these trials in the consortia that you're members of?
Yeah, there's been enormous breakthroughs in the prognosis of pediatric cancer from the clinical trials that all of the patients that we've had on clinical trials in Charlotte at every level, phase one, phase two, and phase three. It's been incredible to see how successful some of these have been and how we've improved the prognosis of children. And in certain circumstances, we've been able to lessen chemotherapy to reduce long-term side effects and still get the same results or even better. So these clinical trials have been very beneficial.
And that comes after the fact that only two chemotherapy drugs for any kind of pediatric cancer have been approved in the last 20 years by the FDA. Is that because the drugs are not being developed or because the FDA approval process is so rigorous and time-consuming? Or why is that?
I think that a lot of it has to do with the FDA process. It's just a lot of drug companies don't go through to get a childhood indication for drugs. And, in fact, many of the drugs that we use on a day-to-day basis and have for years are not approved for those treatments in children by the FDA, but they are standard of care.
Explain that.
Well, it's a very cumbersome product. It's a very cumbersome process to get a drug approved by the FDA. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of research and development. And so a lot of the drugs that we use are used, you know, quote, off-label.
Experimentally? Is that what that means?
No, they're really standard of care. Treatment of
So you're using unapproved drugs to treat children?
We're using drugs that are approved for children for other uses, like prednisone is used to treat acute lymphoblastic leukemia.
Okay.
We treat asthma with that, and we treat poison ivy with that.
So you're short-circuiting the system because you have to?
I think as a pediatric oncology community, we are using the drugs that are available to us and have been tested and proven for years.
So in your professional opinion, what's wrong with the system? Is there something wrong with the system that this has to happen?
I think that a lot of it is actually they're trying to protect, you know, children. When
right.
a new drug comes available, they certainly don't want to prematurely put it on the market and have approval for use in children that could potentially cause harm. So the bar for approval for a drug for children is far higher than it is for adults. And many of the drugs we go through clinical trials to prove that they are effective so that they do get FDA approval.
Everybody knows how expensive healthcare is, and this must be monstrously expensive. Who pays for all this research?
For the phase three trials, the FDA helps out, the National Cancer Institute. For our phase one studies, it is almost entirely community supported. The hospital administration helps, but a lot of the funding for the conducting of these trials is from the community and things that have been raised.
Ballpark figure, what does this cost?
Well, I think
money is being spent.
I think when you take a child who has osteosarcoma, I think their first year of treatment is probably $200,000.
Wow.
It's expensive. And if over a four-year period, the chances of running out of insurance is personally for the family and for the child is a very real fact.
What will the impact of the Affordable Care Act be, if you know, on this kind of thing? She just mentioned running out of insurance. There are lifetime caps on what an insurance policy will pay, and when you reach that cap, you're on your own. And I guess when that happens, you either go into debt or the hospital pays for it or writes it off. I'm not sure what happens. But with the Affordable Care Act, what will happen?
I don't really know enough about the nuances of the Affordable Care Act to comment on that. Just from a personal standpoint, I know that having children being able to be on their parents' insurance till age 26 is a big benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is. It makes a difference.
Your son, Joe, went through this experience with cancer all during his high school years and into college. He went to the University of Pennsylvania.
He did. He did a semester there. He was going to major in biology.
And ultimately to become a PhD, MD. In his memory, you have started this, and also for fundraising purposes, you have started this Joe Dance Film Festival. It's a fundraiser for cancer. Why the name Joe Dance?
Well, it actually came from a friend of ours. When we started, it was a very small gathering in the 10th Street townhomes in the courtyard. I think there were 15 people.
It's in 4th Ward.
It's in 4th Ward. I think there were 15 people there each night. It was really actually put together to help us through a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. And so it just kept growing. And the reason it says Joe Dance is because we decided to show movies from Sundance.
Oh, okay.
So that's where Joe Dance came from.
Okay. Why a film festival?
Well, Joe loved films. Our entire family loves films. That's what we – that was our family activity. And we don't run, so, as a family. So we decided we would not run.
He was a runner?
No, he was not a runner. That was it.
Okay.
No, he actually fell running. So.
You established this in 2010, and you said there were very few people there, but this is obviously growing. What kinds of cancer does the money go to support?
Well, it goes we actually support under the rare pediatric cancer umbrella for us is sarcomas, blastomas, and brain tumors. The blastomas and the brain tumor, that's kind of a – there's a personal connection there, but also it's a small population. And sarcomas, well, our son had osteosarcoma, mm-hmm. but there are several different kinds of sarcomas. We actually, you know, when we get to the point where we sit down and say, you know, where can you use this money – our family felt like, you know, if they had something really promising for a blastoma, let's use the money for that
mm-hmm.
if there's nothing going on with osteosarcoma. That was our feeling, that they really should have the ability to, instead of just only osteosarcoma.
You know, the money it takes to conduct this kind of research, you don't want to turn down money from any source. But I'm just curious. I mean, there are a lot of events for breast cancer and other cancers, runs and walks and bake sales and things like that. Is this how it's done
yeah.
in the rest of the world? I mean, is this where the money comes from in the rest of the world?
I'm not so sure about that. But, you know, I think that there are people that are affected by cancer, whether it's adult or pediatric, and it affects the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, we always felt, and Joe always felt, that people didn't know about bone cancer. The awareness of it is so low because the population is so low. And I just think that, yeah, I think it starts with a bake sale. I think it starts with one person riding a bike. I think it starts with a small gathering in the backyard of somebody's home showing movies on the side of the wall. And I think it grows from there. And I think as the awareness increases, people want to be a part of making a difference. I think that's important to people. And, yeah. I think that's how it starts.
So tell me about this year's festival.
This year's festival, we've made a huge leap this year. We actually have events all year long. We have an outdoor concert called Joe Dance Jam, and we have film selection announcements at the Saloon in the North Carolina Music Factory. We're having an event with the Checkers. The film festival is the culmination of all these fundraisers all year. We are so proud because last year was the first year we showed an original film. It was John Schwartz in Significant Others. And this year we have 7 original films. We have 5 shorts and 2 features. So we have local filmmakers from Charlotte. You have to be from Charlotte. You have to have a Charlotte connection. And it's going to be a great, great event. And we're so thrilled that we have all these original films.
Mm. We'll have information about this on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. And you can get – because it's coming up like today.
It's coming up. It's actually coming up in several hours.
It's today.
I need to get home.
It's today and tomorrow. Your son, Joe, was 20 when he died. And I spent just – it took 30 minutes to watch these two speeches that he made to his high school class, and later after he graduated, he came back about 4 months before he died to make the second speech. And in that second speech, he told, I hope I didn't misunderstand this, and if I did, correct me, he told his friends that he sometimes wondered if all the pain and suffering he had endured in the course of treatment was worth it? He didn't answer the question in that speech. He just mentioned that he wondered sometimes. Was it for him?
You know, we actually talked about that a lot, especially at the end. But, you know, I think there were things that Joe needed and wanted to do before he passed away, and he was willing to go through a second protocol to accomplish that. He probably started his bucket list right after he was diagnosed, because he actually knew what the survival rate of this cancer was. And I think that, you know, I think he always wondered if it was worth it. But I think he accomplished an incredible amount in 20 years and has impacted so many people.
Because other cancers, other children's cancers, you do have remarkable success with. For the young people that go through these treatments, and they're not easy to go through, they're not easy for adults to endure, particularly, and so children must be particularly difficult. Does it change them in some way? Does it make them stronger adults when they survive these things and survive these treatments, and they've gone through things that their peers could never even imagine? And I have 15 seconds. I'm sorry.
Yes, I think it does. I think that it helps them with ability to cope, and they seem to have a much more, in general, positive outlook on life and kind of treasure every day of their life.
Dr. Daniel McMahon is director of the Pediatric Hematology Oncology Division at Levine Children's Hospital, and Diane Restano is the president and founder of the Joe Dance Film Festival. Thanks for joining us.